Ho, 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 and welcome to the Drama Club. On this week's episode, we talk about Tom Cruise's Mission Impossible rant, Vanessa Bryant's extortion from her mom, and Erica Girardi's ongoing divorce drama. Then Mae gets into the crazy story of the Getty family. Stay tuned.
What up, fam? Feels good, right? Woo! Right? Yeah, I know it, dude. Yeah. And without further ado, we broadcast live from CA to NY.
That she was like, my mom said she thinks your baby's gonna be cute, and I said, he better. I'm returning him. Fuck that.
Store credit only.
Yeah, fuck. Where you get store credit for the sex store or your health insurance?
I'll take it. They'll take it from the sex store.
You get a refund on your health insurance.
What is this sweater you've got on?
Oh, I don't know. It's just a house thing.
I like
it. Long. Thinks it's cozy. You know what else? I'm in my office. I have the signed Clayton Kershaw Dodger ball.
Wow.
This is probably like his first year. I don't even think he had won any of his Cy Youngs yet.
That's what I was going to say. They should sign when they sign. They should put the year on it.
Yeah, he didn't put shit. It just says... whatever, and it's all, I never put it in like a box or anything. Mm-hmm. So it's all like just rolling around right here on my desk.
I used to have one when I was a kid. Of it wasn't like actually signed but it had like all of the signatures printed on it,
and I like those,
and I remember keeping that one in one of those things, and I was like, for what though?
That's cute. Because you're little.
Yeah.
You don't know.
Have you watched anything good?
No, because I've been watching Christmas stuff. So, like, yeah, Home Alone is good. But, I mean, I hope y'all have seen that shit already. I watched Die Hard the other day. That shit was still good. But also...
breaking news. Boop, 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 boop. Home Alone
Die is Hard good. Is all right. What else did I watch? I watched Elf. I watch that one pretty much every year. And what else did I watch? I've really been watching Christmas stuff.
That's cute.
Oh, I watched that Christmas show on Netflix that people were talking about.
What show?
It's the name of two people. Hold on.
Oh, I was thinking I should rewatch the Kacey Musgraves Christmas special because it was cute.
It was so cute. Mae and Dash and Lily is the show I'm talking about. It was really cute. It's like a teenage
thing. Yeah, it was real cute. Oh, Dash and Lily?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I thought those are two dog names.
You know who's the main boy? He's from Euphoria. He's the skinny white boy who likes the thicker Mexican girl in his class.
Yeah. Timmy Chalamet.
Yeah, basically. He's the main boy in that, and he's cute.
Is he Dash or Lily?
He's Dash.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good boy, Dash. Good boy.
Prancer and Vixen and Dash and Lily. Well, what have you been watching? I wanted to start watching The Undoing, but I just haven't gotten around to it.
I've been watching Veneno. It's also on HBO Max.
Yeah, I saw that.
That shit is tight.
I watched that other Spanish show, which is Two Homegirls on HBO Max.
What is that?
It's called...
oh, you know what? I think I have something on my list that sounds like that, but I haven't started watching it.
It's pretty funny. They're ratchet. I tried to watch the first episode of that one, The Flight Attendant.
I don't like her, though.
I don't like her either. And I've never actually seen her.
Exactly. Same. But I know I don't like her.
There's something about her that I don't like. But it looked good, and I was like, okay, a flight attendant, this could be sexy. Like, because it was like, she's single, and she's like, and then it turns into a murder mystery. And I was like, oh, what? I didn't sign up for this. So then I stopped.
So should I give it a shot or no? Because I'm thinking of watching it. But I don't know if I can get over not liking her. But then I'm like, why don't I like her?
I watched the first episode and I'm not interested in going back.
Oh, okay.
So I don't know. If you're going to watch a murder mystery, usually it's way better right away.
Yeah. The Heaven's Gate thing, I started watching it. It's not as great as I wanted it to be, though.
Really? I like the cover because it's what's-his-face and he looks all scary.
Marshall, yeah.
Yeah. Beep, boop, bop, boop. Oh, you know, I watched them. I was going to ask you if you watched The Mandalorian, because I watched that show and it just ended this week.
No, but should
you I? You should. Okay. Yes. It's very good.
I don't know why I'm not like, why I didn't jump on it. I love Star Wars, you know?
I know. I think because it's a spinoff, you know? Mm-hmm. And like sometimes those don't, like, yeah. I didn't watch the Han Solo movie.
That's
did you
true.
Watch it?
I did not watch that.
Yeah, I'm not like a huge spinoff person, yeah. But actually it's really good. And I love Pedro Pascal and... He does a really good job.
I like that the guest stars they seem to have seem pretty good.
They're really good. Yeah, Rosario Dawson was on this.
Oh, really? Sorry,
it was on this season. Yeah, and she and her character was badass.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, maybe you gotta watch it.
Okay.
This season was great, and the finale was great. I'm sure everybody feels that way. Mm-hmm. That's all I'll say about that. No spoilers. No spoilers. So Tom Cruise went on a little tirade. A little
worse than I mean well no I won't pass judgment on whether it was better or worse, but like similar to Christian Bale, which we had an episode on,
right? So they're filming Mission Impossible
58 57.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, whatever. And I guess some of the crew was not wearing masks.
We don't,
or they were just breaking protocol.
We don't know what the actual offense was. They could have been just standing too close to each other or whatever.
Yeah, so part of the crew was breaking COVID protocol, and Tom just went off.
Like went off, lost
he
it.
He really popped off on them, yelling at them, talking about how, you know, they're making this movie in this time, and people are looking to them, and he's talking to the industry people. And they're, like, setting a standard, and that people are losing their jobs, and this is very important that they stay within protocol. Mm-hmm. Honestly, doesn't sound too bad, right?
Right.
But it's just like the way it all came out.
Exactly.
Like the way he's yelling and berating them.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And how, like, I don't know, kind of like on a high horse.
Mm-hmm.
Also behind the, like, curtain of that. He's a Scientologist.
Scientology, for sure, yeah.
And it's like, I don't even think you guys really believe in COVID, my dude. Like,
no, but absolutely. He was like, I've got this whole industry on my shoulders. This is what I sleep with at night.
I know. And he was like, I'm talking to all the studio heads every night and all this shit. And I'm like, no, you're not. Shut the fuck up. Don't nobody want to talk to your ass.
I can understand the absolute frustration to the breaking point of, like, you know, we've got a 9/11 happening every single day. And someone's like, let's say they had their masks off or something. Oh God, that would drive me crazy. Yes. But then there's a way to speak to people. And we talked about this with Christian Bale. Like, there's just at the base of it, it's just completely unprofessional.
Yeah. And like I'm somebody that yells, so I'll like say like and like, you know, you but it's like a lot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like imagine him jumping on a couch while he was doing this. This is absolutely
yeah. How about Alec Baldwin came to his defense? And I was like, bro, sit the fuck down.
Yeah, I didn't know Alec came to his defense, but you're not the one that needs to.
Yeah. And I was like, dude, don't make us pull up that voicemail you left your daughter. That shit's crazy.
There was a lot of love for him online, for Tom.
Yeah, which honestly, May, I don't know if it's because like there's something about him that I don't trust, and and honestly, I do judge him because he's like so high up in.
And Leah Remini famously said, "Of all the famous Scientologists, he's the one that she knows everything that's going on, like all the bad shit, because he's so high up. He's like the number two Scientologist."
Yeah. Like I don't trust him, so I almost think it's a publicity stunt.
Really? Well, you know what? I'm kind of with you, because when it leaked, and at first I was kind of like, if I tried to separate how he was saying and what he was saying, I'm still sympathetic to what he was saying.
100% me too. And then that's why I think it's a publicity stunt.
So I was like, so when I was like listening to what he was saying, I was like, and I was like, somebody leaked this to show that
that he cares.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah. I don't like it. At the end of the day, I don't like it, but I get it.
I get it. But any boss talking to their staff is not, that's not appropriate. That's
right.
Toxic.
Right. Yeah.
You can't get away with that shit.
And also the other thing I don't know is like, because this is literally life and death, I can maybe forgive it, but we don't know like what happened after. Like, does he double down on it? Like, does he say, oh my God, I'm sorry that I went off on that? Because I could, like, if he apologized to the crew after, you know, let bygones yeah. be bygones, but we don't know what happened.
Right.
After, we don't know what the offense was. If it right. was like, you guys, can you stand a little bit further apart? Then, okay, maybe like,
yeah,
it wasn't worth it, but I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know either. It's just this weird. He's a weirdo. And not in like a, I don't know, like a friendly way.
I know.
That's friendly weirdos.
That same day, I think it was, Katie Holmes went Instagram official with her boo.
Her chef boo?
Oh, is he a chef? Because yeah. I took a screenshot because I saw this and I was like, this is so fucking funny. It was, oh, it says Pasta Empire Boyfriend.
It's weird to me that she's all up out with him when she was so hush hush with but I guess that Jamie has
because yeah, he's Jamie famous Fox. Also because that's like
exactly
a, yeah
so I'm sure Jamie had some say in that mm-hmm. also, which I love that.
Yeah me too.
So mysterious. I actually really liked them as a couple together. I was like, damn, that's badass.
Yeah because I think he's kind of like too much and she's not enough. So I think like
it elevates both of them.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it made me think higher of like mm-hmm. him for being, you know, attracted to a woman like her and her similarly.
Yeah.
For being too attracted to a man like him. I like Jamie Foxx. There's something about him. He's likable.
I just want him to like chill. Like, I don't.
Yeah, he's too much for you.
I like him in movies, but then like if you ever see him like in a sketch or something, I'm like, oh my God, like calm down.
I think he seems like a good time. Oh God.
Allie Larder was another big thing this week.
Oh, that's right. Allie Larder. Dude, a woman who I remember Allie Larder from Drive Me Crazy. Okay, do you remember that movie?
Yeah. Is and that she Adrienne was young as fuck. Renier and
yes,
and Sabrina the Teenage Witch.
Melissa Joan Hart. Uh-huh. Yeah. And Allie Larder. And I remember, like, God, she's like gorgeous.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And then her career never really took off. Like,
I think of her always as Legally Blonde.
Yes. Also,
that's like my basically only reference of her for the most part.
And she's barely in that one.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then, I don't know. It just, like, nothing happened, but look. Yeah. Uh-huh. Anyways, so Allie Larder, it came out that, what fucking show is she on?
Heroes with Milo Ventimiglia and
he's so hot.
Hayden Panettiere launched their careers.
So a co-star on that show, Leonard Roberts, who is a black man, said that she mistreated him on set. And then it also came out that she refused to do any intimate scenes with him on the show.
Who played her husband.
Right. So he then credited her basically like everything she said and like her refusal to act with him, intimately on the show mm-hmm. as like the reason that his character was so short lived.
Yeah. And the article,
so she ruined him.
And the article was, I thought the article was great because they got comment from like everybody. And it's like nobody said that wasn't true.
Right.
At minimum, people were just like, oh, you know, he was a great actor and he was great to work with. But I don't know like why he was written off the show or whatever. That was like the worst thing somebody had to say about him, which leads me to believe it's all true.
Yeah.
But Allie Larder, a piece of shit on set, never, like, for what? Like, you're not that great.
Exactly. Yeah. And like, why would you pull it? But see, this is like the problem. And this is like systemic racism, right? Yeah. Like, the white women have that kind of pull, even if they're not like a high level celebrity.
And that was one of the most biting statements in that article, too, that one of his co-stars, one of Leonard's co-stars, were like, come on, dude, they're always going to pick the hot white woman.
Yeah.
Over
and that's
you.
Fucked up. And it's like there's not a million of them.
Right. And like that statement was said on set like it was like nothing, like just like
a, just a passing comment. Uh-huh. Yeah. So she issued an apology.
She did.
She said, I'm deeply saddened to hear about Leonard Roberts' experience on Heroes, and I'm heartbroken reading his perception of our relationship, which absolutely doesn't match my memory mm-hmm. nor experience on the show. I respect Leonard as an artist, and I applaud him or anyone using their voice and platform. I'm truly sorry for any role I may have played in his painful experience. During that time, I wish him and his family the best. Okay. Yeah. Nice little...
I would like to hear...
any responsibility.
I would like to hear what NT has to say about this. I'm sure he has tea on this because he seems to be close with Hayden.
Oh, really? I was going to say, how he don't know nobody that knows Ali. She barely famous.
Yeah, he seems to be close with Hayden, and I think he knows Milo.
Interesting. Hayden and Milo's relationship is
problematic.
Yeah, he was like 30, right? And yeah. She was like 19 or something?
She was like 17.
Ooh, no. Ooh, baby.
What is you doing?
Literally.
Yeah, so interesting. Ellie Larder, racist.
Yeah, Ellie Larder, we don't need you.
Yeah.
I mean, we've been fine without you.
I'll go back to not thinking about you until the next time I see Legally Blonde.
Seriously. Just going to go ahead and continue not thinking about you at all. Have you seen Vanessa Bryant's drama with her mom?
That's the other thing I was going to tell you.
Yeah, so Vanessa Bryant's mom is suing her, right?
Yeah, for $5 million.
So Vanessa then took to her Instagram and made a statement because her mom is saying that she used to nanny their girls and she wants back pay.
Yeah.
And Vanessa is like, no.
Vanessa's like, I was a stay-at-home mom.
Yeah, she's like, I was a stay-at-home mom. Up until like the last 5 years, we only had two girls.
Yeah.
And I stayed at home with them and they were full-time students. Like the girls went to school and
yeah.
She said, this is all false. Like, we bought her a house. She gets alimony from her divorce. And we continue to still help her out from now and then. And now she's just taking advantage of the situation. It's fucked up.
She's fucking trash. But you know what? I can't help to think, like, if I'm Vanessa and I have Vanessa's money, I'd be like, take your fucking $5 million. Get the fuck out of my life. I never want to see you again. Bye. Have fun with that.
I don't know, man. I think it's the principle. Like, I know,
but it's just like,
yeah.
I just want her to go away and, like, because this is painful.
But she never will. You're going to give her what she wants and she's going to come back and do it again. She's probably done this.
I'm going to do it real publicly, you know? Like, because if this is what she's asking for, she wants a car also. She wants a Mercedes SUV. $5 million in a Mercedes SUV. So I'd be like,
that's one hell of an extortion right there. I want $1 million and a RAV4. And I want pizza delivered on Friday at 6.
Those are my demands.
Right now.
Unmarked bills. This is what I would do. I would get one of those big ass bows like from the Lexus commercials, put that shit on the car, go on Instagram Live and like, look, everybody. This is what she wants. Here it is. And then just like make it rain on the car. $5 million. Now go away forever. You got what you asked for. Goodbye.
Nah, I think you're giving her too much credit. She's not going to go away forever. She's going to say, oh, she didn't give me exactly that money. We didn't write anything down on paper. These people are ghetto, man.
Yeah.
That shit's crazy.
I knew she was ghetto because she made her initial demands earlier this year on like Primer Impacto.
Yeah. Remember she got interviewed like with the quickness right after Kobe passed away?
Mm-hmm.
That's fucking disgusting and despicable.
Mm-hmm.
You're a fucking scoundrel.
Yeah.
How do you fucking sleep at night even? How about throwing, like, how about like the, I took care of my grandchildren. Like, do you have to wrap them in this? Like,
right. Because you should probably do that for free. Honestly.
I know. Like, what? I mean, they buy you a house. Like, you can't babysit it every once in a while. Like,
that's what Vanessa said. She was like, if anything, she watched them, like, on occasion, like any normal grandparent.
Right.
Imagine, like, every time we stayed over at our grandparents' house or something, they were like, okay, give me my money.
Fuck. My grandma would have been rich as fuck. Yeah, that shit's crazy. That's sad. I feel bad for Vanessa. She don't deserve this right now. And
I know.
That's fucked up. The only other thing I have is still Erica.
Erica, like, I know. I'm like every single day I'm looking at Erica Jane. What's happening? What's going on?
Okay, so we talked to you guys about this maybe last week.
Honestly. Maybe every week.
Yeah. Erica Girardi, who's Erica Jane on The Real Housewives of Beverly Hills for the last like 3 seasons now, I guess. who, like we said, was married to Tom Girardi, a like powerhouse class action attorney in Los Angeles.
The Aaron Brockovich.
Aaron Brockovich guy. Yeah.
The Aaron Brockovich dude.
They're going through a divorce and he's involved in like these heavy lawsuits from his clients. She posted and then deleted with the quickness some screenshots from also from like a 2015 Motorola phone.
Yeah. No, that's generous because it was definitely like it was pre-smartphone phone.
Yes. It was a flip phone screenshot.
For sure. Somebody said LG chocolate. Remember that one?
Yeah, I forgot about that one. Who was the music person in that video?
Was it for Usher? That
phone? No, it wasn't Usher. It was somebody who was hot for like a second. Like a rave type. Yeah, something like that. Anyways, forgot about that one. Okay, anyway, so she posted screenshots of texts from somebody who she says is having an affair with her husband, basically saying like, oh, I need you to pay for the plastic surgery.
My sax bill.
Yeah, my sax bill. Like, you know, that I want to hook up. I want ready to have sex.
There was sexual.
There was a butt, a Jean butt pic. Yeah, that's it, pretty much, right? Yeah.
Yeah. And she was like, this is a bitch that's having an affair with my man. With my
she husband. Said, but it's a judge, Justice Bigelow, who's like an appellate court judge in California. She's like, was fucking my husband. He was paying her sax bill and paying her plastic surgery. Ooh.
And I didn't know that Gavin Newsom had appointed Tom to help pick like the upcoming judges.
Yeah.
That's messy.
This is so bad. But so Tom and Erica do a lot of fundraising for politicians, so that like they have a lot of pull in the legal community. So she posted that, then deleted it. It's fucking messy. I don't know, dude, it's like really bad.
Yeah. Ugh. And now Tom is trying to claim that he's mentally incompetent. His lawyers are trying to claim because he has a big ass. The problem with his thing is that he has a big ass Ponzi scheme and he owes his clients hundreds upon hundreds of millions of dollars.
Or I don't even know if he owes his clients anymore as much as he owes the lenders. So he would settle out lawsuits with his clients by loaning money from these lenders, high interest loans. So I think he probably both at this point. He probably still owes some clients and owes some lenders. Because
they talked about that kid from San Bruno who
that was fucked up.
Got burned in that explosion from. Do you guys remember that? That was like a few years ago. But
SPNG.
PG&E. Anyway, he got
PB&J.
This kid got like 90% of his body burned, and like he's got multiple tens of millions of dollars settlement, and he hasn't gotten paid a dime. So like he had to sue Tom, and then things started falling apart.
They came to an agreement for like $12 million. Tom paid him $1 million, and then didn't pay him anymore.
Yeah.
That's a very certain kind of evil. I mean, he's in terms of his legal career, it's absolutely over.
Well, he's 9,000 years old, so
yeah, it should have been over, honestly. We'll see about jail time at this point.
Yeah,
and with his age, he could very well pass in prison. It's a really mighty. It's a far fall from the top.
And he was like, he said he has like a couple thousand dollars in money. Oh, and they froze his and Erica's assets. And I saw that Erica was trying to sell clothes on on one of those apps,
Depop or whatever.
One of those. And then the judge ordered her to stop. My girl.
It's fucking crazy, man.
You need money for Uber? I'll send you. I'll Venmo you, Erica.
All her gays that she had on her payroll, poor guys.
Oh, I feel bad because those are like legit her only friends. Her friends on the payroll.
She pays them. Yeah.
And like,
for sure.
Goodbye.
Yeah. That's really sad.
Yeah.
Woo. Maybe Dorit will let her, let her come over and stay at her rented house in the valley.
The Real Housewives of Beverly Hills really needs to be Real Housewives of Encino because y'all all live over there.
Yeah.
Did you ever stop to think what it is that makes someone open a pocketbook? Or fill out and put his signature on a check? Or reach into his pocket for his wallet? Or count out some silver?
What's up, everybody? My name is Stephanie.
And my name is May.
And this is the Drama Club.
Woo!
This is the podcast about scandals, celebrities, gossip, drama, reality TV,
lawsuits,
old Christmas movies,
sport,
and more.
Old telephones.
Yeah.
LG chocolates. Anyway, it's my turn this week, and let's talk about the Gettys.
Okay.
For this, I read a book called Painfully Rich, The Outrageous Fortunes and Misfortunes of the Heirs of J. Paul Getty by John Pearson. This book is the basis of the film All the Money in the World, starring Michelle Williams and Mark Wahlberg, and infamously first Kevin Spacey, who was later replaced by Christopher Plummer. That movie could probably have its own Afternoon Delight episode because there was drama on that set. I love
Christopher Plummer.
I love him too. I actually just watched him in a Christmas movie yesterday called
What movie?
Silent Partner. It was about a bank robbery. He was the villain, and he was like, it was like from the 70s, and he was very like sexy in it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, this book has since been renamed All the Money in the World in case anybody wants to read it. I didn't rewatch that movie, but I remember liking it at the time. I did binge the series Trust this week, though, which is also about this. And it's not bad. You know, I love Brendan Fraser, but I didn't think it was great either.
Ooh, yeah. Young Christopher Plummer could get it.
He could get it, huh?
Yeah. Plus, he's such a good actor. He's so good at his job.
Yeah, like, for sure. Yeah. Tough. That black and white picture. Yep. Yeah. He's hot. So anyway, if you like this story and don't necessarily watch Trust, but maybe watch All the Money in the World. Okay. So let's start with some background on the patriarch of this dynasty, Jean-Paul Getty. He was born on December
5th. JPG.
He was born on December 15th,
1892. Nope.
Happy birthday, my dude.
What are you, 200 today, sir?
Tom Girardi was his childhood schoolmate. Okay, anyway. And he was a strange son of a bitch, I think. I think to understand somewhat why he was the way he was, we need to know a little bit about his parents, George and Sarah. They were certainly a power couple in the 1800s. Get this. So they met in college in Michigan, where George was studying to be a teacher. He asked Sarah to marry him, but she was like, no offense, I've got bigger aspirations in life than what a teacher can provide.
Ooh.
but she was like, but how about this? Sure, let's get married, but only if we use my dowry to put you through law school. And that's what they did. Then she was like, listen, so I hear Minneapolis is a big up and coming city for industry, and I would imagine they need a lot of lawyers out there. So we're moving there. Then later, she was like, I'm going to need you to get into insurance. And he did. And like before you knew it, they were a pretty successful upper middle class couple.
Good for her.
I sort of get the impression that like if she had been born decades later, it would have been her that would have been doing all
of
this.
Of course. Yeah.
But, you know, I guess she found a good partner in George because he recognized that she had vision and ambition and really trusted her gut for most things and then really valued her opinion. Because even when he had ideas, he'd never do anything without running it past her. So they were great. So like most couples at the time, they set forth to expand their family and they had a little girl, but she got typhoid and died. Sarah got it too and survived, but it really fucked with her health for the rest of her life. So it was like kind of a miracle when she got pregnant, sort of older at around 40, and after having all these health problems with her little baby boy, J. Paul. And because he was this miracle baby and they were traumatized from losing their first child, the world revolved around him. They loved him dearly and J. Paul loved them very much also. Anyway, so when J. Paul was 10, George's work took him to Oklahoma on a trip one time, and he saw the beginnings of people kind of creating a small oil industry down there. So when he got back to Minnesota, he ran it by Sarah, like, what would you think of us investing in some land down there? It's possible we might find some oil on the property someday. And Sarah thought it over and was like, absolutely, let's do this. And yep, they struck oil.
Jesus.
And within 2 years, the Gettys were millionaires.
That's crazy.
This is nuts because Sarah, I think, grew up middle class and George's parents were literally peasants. Yeah. So they were like true self-made millionaires.
That's awesome.
So after those 2 years in Oklahoma, Sarah decided to move the family out to Los Angeles, which is wild because there was literally nothing out here but dirt roads and beaches.
I was going to say, what year is this? What the fuck?
This is like in the teens. This is like 19... 19- 11 or 1912.
Oh, she's a visionary shit.
She is. But kind of like what she predicted with Minneapolis, she also predicted Los Angeles was going to get popping too. And George soon found ways to expand his operation and business interests here. And that's how and why the Getty name has sort of become synonymous with Los Angeles. So teenage J. Paul was a rich kid whose parents were devoted to him. And as you can imagine, he wanted for nothing.
He's an only child?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Fuck. Because Sarah was older when she finally was able to have him. It was just, yeah. And then she was like, she was real fucked up. Like, she went deaf pretty soon and she was like in a wheelchair. Or like, yeah, she was in typhoid. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So he wanted for nothing. He was a bookworm. His nickname was Dictionary. I think that's a great nickname. Very smart. He became fluent in French, German, Italian. He was conversational in Spanish, Greek, Arabic, and Russian. Just an extremely bright dude with a big future ahead of him, because of course his father's dream was for him to take over the family business one day. There was only one problem. J. Paul's parents were super religious. His dad more so than his mom. She was a Methodist, and he was too, but later he converted to Christian Science. And you know how converts and like born again people take that shit extra serious and like start doing the most?
Yes.
That's exactly what happened with George. So, like, his parents didn't drink at all, and it was important to them that J. Paul lived a chaste life. No booze, no bitches. The no booze part wasn't a huge problem for J. Paul. I mean, he liked to party, but you don't really have time to get drunk when you're busy reading every book and learning every single language.
Right.
But the no bitches part, that was a problem. J. Paul was a certified freak 7 days a week. This man had what I'd guess
everybody has a vice, dude.
Exactly.
If it's not drinking, or if it's not like a little bit of a few things, you're gonna go all in on one.
Exactly. Yeah.
Nobody's that pure.
Well, his parents were.
No, they weren't. They had something. You don't know.
Typhoid.
Yeah. Greed.
No, his parents actually weren't greedy. Like, they were like, they had, you know, a nice car. And a nice house. And, like, they were good with that. Like,
that's cool.
They weren't, like, crazy spending money or anything.
Okay.
So, this man, J. Paul, I guess, had what we'd call an insatiable appetite for women. Let's put it like this. In his old age, like, in his 80s, he was getting this experimental Czechoslovakian drug called H3 injected into his dick just to be able to keep it up.
Dude. But that's crazy. You can throw a full-on robot in your dick just because...
Yeah.
I mean, you can't not, like...
Well, in his case, he had, like, 4-plus live-in girlfriends in the fuck rotation. Like,
yeah.
So he had to be able to keep it up or else, you know.
Right.
What was the point of keeping these bitches in his house?
Fucking Viagra, man.
It changed the game.
Changed the world. I just saw a meme that was like, Pfizer, blue pills make pee-pee hard. And everybody's like, yay! And then it's like, Pfizer, this cures COVID. And everybody's like, no.
I'm loving that meme that's like, if you've ever.
Yes. I know what you're saying. I saw one that was like, if you've ever gone to Circle Bar in Santa Monica, don't be scared of what's in the COVID vaccine.
Yeah, exactly.
But I saw a TikTok that was this cholo, and he was like, if you ever been in one of the pools in Vegas partying, don't be tripping about what's in the COVID vaccine. I was dying.
Oh, my man, skateboard Fleetwood Mac got COVID, huh?
Yeah, I saw that. He's all right, though.
Yeah, I know. He definitely don't got to worry about COVID. COVID got to be worried about that, motherfucker.
Yes.
So, anyway. But this fuck rotation wasn't gonna fly with his parents, especially his dad. But J. Paul took it for granted that at the end of the day, it wasn't gonna be a big deal because they loved him so much. And the times where it did kind of seem like maybe it was gonna be a big deal and it was gonna turn into a thing, Sarah would inevitably smooth it over because, like, that was her baby. So when her husband was getting pissed, and George would, like, default to whatever, you know, she was the pants in the family, so... If Sarah was like, don't worry about it, he'd be like, ugh, all right.
It's so funny, like, parent dynamics like that. Like, when, like, your dad gets mad about something and you got to go to your mom and then she's got to, like.
Yep, I know.
That happened to me all the time. And she would be like, don't worry about it. And then I'd be like, okay, cool.
Your mom is your lawyer and shit. I need you to make this go away. Your fixer. Okay, so Jay Paul kind of bounced around colleges, first to USC and then to UC Berkeley. But something about college just wasn't his scene. I think in part because he'd fallen in love with Europe during a vacation there with his parents. Then, in 1912, his dad pulled some strings and got the President of the United States, William Taft, to write a letter of recommendation for Jay Paul to do like an independent study thing at Oxford so that he could move to Europe.
Jesus Christ. I wish you guys could see my face right now.
I know.
Like, I'm just going to fuck around and get you a letter of rec from the president.
Yeah, yeah.
That's wild.
And at Oxford, he fell even more in love with Europe, especially because he was able to mix with super fancy people there, including the Prince of Wales, a.k.a. the future King Edward VIII. And he also got that chip on his shoulder that a lot of new money rich people get when they're faced with those like fancy types and royalty. Yeah,
new money and old money. That's the fucking power dynamic right there.
Exactly. That's like, if you're new money, you better find a spouse that's old money, a partner that's old money. Cause like,
fuck that. I like new money. Cause it's kind of ratchet.
It is ratchet.
Yeah, it's good. Good. Remind those fools, just cause you got money don't mean you're fucking classy.
Yeah, it's true. So anyway, so for the rest of his life, whether consciously or subconsciously, there was like this need to be accepted by fancy people and to be sort of like seen on their level.
Yeah.
So during and after Oxford, Jay Paul continued fucking his way through Europe until it was time to come back home to LA in 1914. And that's when George decided to gift Jay Paul with $10,000 to invest in his own drilling operation in Oklahoma. And as luck would have it, Jay Paul struck oil within a year and was now a millionaire in his own right. So what's a 25-year-old millionaire sexaholic to do? That
he's starring Titanic. No, I'm just kidding.
That's right, get bitches pregnant. And in 1917, a woman named Elsie Ekstrom brought a paternity suit against him, claiming that he was the father of her baby Paula.
Ooh, that's ghetto. Paternity lawsuit. This was going on Mari and shit. That's real good.
Look at her nose, Paula. Mari, look at her nose and her name, Paula. And that baby was Paula Abdul. Okay, so like the Getty lawyers, of course, smeared her as a well-known promiscuous whore in the press and in front of the court. But at the end of the day, Jay Paul settled with Elsie to the tune of $10,000 to get out of town. And neither Elsie nor baby Paula were ever heard from again. For $10,000. I mean, $10,000 was a lot of money back then, but still.
Well, he took $10,000 and flipped it into becoming a millionaire.
Yeah,
right?
So, yeah. Is he, is it Meek Mill's girlfriend?
Oh, no, it was, oh my God.
Jeez.
Gucci Mane.
Gucci Mane, yeah. Is J. Paul Gucci Mane's like girl?
60,000 when he went into prison, and she like had $5 million.
Yeah, good for her, man.
Yeah, that's badass.
So both Jay Paul and the press never really thought about this incident, but George Getty certainly made a mental note about it. Meanwhile, Jay Paul was proving that he was crazy good at business. His personal fortune continued to grow into the multiple millions of dollars, along with the millions he was making for the family company. So he seemed like he was in a great position to take over for George when the time was right, especially because George had a stroke. So Jay Paul had more responsibility than ever, and George seemed like he'd want to retire soon. In 1923, 31-year-old Jay Paul fell in love with a 17-year-old girl named Jeanette.
Okay, Milo Ventimiglia.
There you go. And he married her with the quickness in Cuernavaca, Mexico.
Hell yeah.
When he brought her back to LA to meet his parents, they were ecstatic because they figured that this meant that Jay Paul was settling down. Plus, they loved Jeanette. Like, she just seemed like really tight. Mm-hmm. And everything seemed cool at first until Jeanette got pregnant. Basically, as soon as she had the baby, a little boy named George Getty II, after Jay Paul's father, Jay Paul was disgusted by Jeanette, disgusted with marriage, and disgusted by the notion of being a father.
Wow.
So he left his wife and baby and kept fucking around. At the divorce proceedings, Jeanette says that he smacked her around and threatened to kill her. So needless to say, that relationship was like over. But before the divorce was finalized in 1926, our boy Jay Paul got married again to another 17-year-old named Aline in Cuernavaca again. Needless to say, because he was still legally married, the second marriage wasn't legal.
Okay.
But also within 2 years, both Aline and J. Paul regretted the marriage and amicably separated. But Papa George Getty continued to collect the receipts.
Ooh.
Mm-hmm. Something's coming. There's a little, you know, crumb for you guys. J. Paul had abandoned his wife and son, was an adulterer and a bigamist to boot. This was not fucking good. Even Sarah started to publicly wonder if her son had been, quote, taken over by the devil.
Ooh.
That boy got the devil in him. Then, in 1928, wouldn't you know it, 36-year-old J. Paul met another 17-year-old girl in Vienna named Adolphine. And again, married her in Cuernavaca.
So he did it, like, in the 20s. This was just his, like, little routine.
Yeah, yeah.
You meet a 17-year-old, get married in Mexico. Mm-hmm. A 17-year-old, get married in Mexico.
Mm-hmm. Maybe get divorced.
Oh, right.
Yeah, maybe. Again, George and Sarah hoped that this meant that J. Paul had turned a corner when Adolphine came to live in Los Angeles, because once again, she seemed like a really great girl and they loved her. But then, once again, as soon as Adolphine gave birth to their son, Ronald Getty, a year later in 1929, J. Paul abandoned his wife and child. And that turned out to be the last straw for Papa George, and unbeknownst to anyone, he essentially wrote J. Paul out of his will. And Papa George died the next year. All right, so get this. Papa George left 2/3 of the Getty Company to Sarah, as well as almost all of his $10 million fortune. J. Paul was left only $500,000 and the remaining 1/3 of the company.
Oh, wow.
So as of this moment in 1930, Sarah is the boss and J. Paul is big hurt. It was a huge public slap in the face. And according to our old friend, maybe murderer, Klaus von Bülow, go look up his episode if you forgot about him.
Yeah.
That episode is the one with the helicomas in it. Anyway, Klaus was J. Paul's right-hand arm man. And he says that basically from that moment on, the goal and obsession of J. Paul's entire life was to make and hoard enough money to sort of exact revenge on his father. Like, George didn't think that his son was worthy enough to run a business or be in charge of a fucking fortune while fucking every bitch in sight. So now J. Paul was going to do everything in his power to fuck all the bitches in the world and straight up make all the money in the world.
Oh.
For what, though? Like, he's dead. He's never going to know.
It's just these men.
Yeah. Dude. Yeah. I feel like a lot of our episodes could be just like, ugh, men.
Yeah. Like.
Meanwhile, he fucked with the wrong one when he abandoned my girl Adolphine and baby Ronald, because Adolphine's dad was this big time prominent doctor in Germany. Like, he was like the Dr. Fauci of Germany.
Okay.
So he had hella pull over there and was also very, very wealthy. So Adolphine's dad was like, you and the baby come home to Germany and we're going to sue the fuck out of that piece of shit.
Good.
And J. Paul, not one to back down from a fight, was like, okay, no problem. I got hella money. I could drag this shit out forever and bankrupt you guys. But I don't think he realized how determined Adolphine's dad was, because he really, really loved his daughter and his grandson. So this was personal. Like, it doesn't get more personal for this. So he was like, I got time. Also, litigation was all happening over there in Germany, where J. Paul just didn't have the same kind of pull. You can't call the president.
It was more costly for him.
Uh-huh. Exactly. So this case was dragging on for like a couple of years. Meanwhile, J. Paul continues to make more and more moves that grow the company while trying and trying to convince his mom to relinquish control of the business. More on that in a minute.
How old is his mom?
She's like 60-something. She's like real old at this point. A real old because, not because 60 is that old, but because she had been in such poor health for...
her condition.
Yeah. So I'm sure that J. Paul would have made good on his promise to bankrupt his estranged wife's family, prolonging that court battle, if not for the fact that at 40 he met another young lady that he wanted to marry, a 21-year-old aspiring actress named Anne, and Anne got reggaeton.
Nice.
So J. Paul, eager not to have, you know what's weird though, he seems to pick like really cool women. Like, all of these women seem to be like very nice, smart, bright women. Like, he never...
it's funny because I wonder if he ends up not liking them too because his parents like them so much.
I don't know, because he did love his parents and he did like seek their approval.
Yeah.
But maybe you're right.
I don't know. Look at what fucking Prince...
Harry?
No.
Charles.
There you go. Like, Diana, he kind of picked because he wanted his parents' approval, and then everybody loved her, but then he would get jealous.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. True.
So, I don't know.
Right. Yeah, maybe. Okay, so J. Paul, eager not to have a quote-unquote bastard, and thinking that this time he might actually try to be a father, needed to wrap things up with his divorce so that he could marry Anne before the baby got here. But now Adolphine and her father had the upper hand, because now he's like, all right, guys, like, let's, you know, finish. And apparently she got a fucking fat settlement once she agreed to wrap things up. So unfortunately, it was settled after baby John Paul Getty Jr. was born in 1932, which I guess mattered for some reason. And J. Paul held a fucking grudge against Adolphine, her father, and his own son, Ronald.
Oh, no.
Which would have huge consequences. Let's put a pin in that for later. Okay, so J. Paul did end up marrying Anne, but you guessed it, he largely abandoned her and Paul Jr. It seems like Anne was busy trying to get her own career off the ground at that time, so I don't think she took it hella personal that J. Paul wasn't around, because she was busy, and like she was like, okay, he's a businessman, he's busy.
Right.
Yeah, because she ended up getting pregnant pretty much right away again with the quickness. And the year after Junior was born, another son, Gordon Getty, was born in 1933.
Okay.
And J. Paul bounced again. This time, though, Anne saw the writing on the wall and realized that J. Paul was, like, a real-life scumbag. Especially because J. Paul kept proving to be cruel, like, on top of everything. Like, not only was he not around, but when he was around, like, he was really cruel to her and to the kids. When they were in Italy and she was still pregnant and ready to pop with baby Gordon, J. Paul forced her to do this hike slash climb on Mount Vesuvius with him.
What?
Yeah. And I think that was the moment where she was like, he's a sociopath.
Monster. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, my God. Man, Hawal can't even force me to go to the refrigerator. You better get up.
So while he was in the middle of divorcing Anne in 1936, his mother, Sarah, in her infinite wisdom, started making moves. Last we left Sarah, J. Paul was going to work on her, trying to convince her to give up control of the company. But Sarah wasn't willing to do that for a couple of reasons. First of all, as we know, she and Papa George were partners in every sense of the word, so she really wanted to respect his final wishes. Second of all, she noticed that J. Paul was taking bigger and bigger risks with what little control of the company he had in an effort to create exponential growth and acquire exponential wealth. And as we're now in the middle of the Great Depression, she didn't trust J. Paul with all that power and money. Not that he'd lost any money up until that point. In fact, he'd been like crazy lucky and super savvy, but she figured it was just a matter of time until his luck ran out.
Right.
But J. Paul figured that they could grow the company by acquiring controlling interests in other regional oil companies now during the Depression while their stock prices were in the toilet, and just gobble them up and become a huge mega corporation. If only he had control of the Getty Company and bank accounts to make the moves that he needed to make. Which, of course, is smart as fuck. So Sarah was like,
it's like stonks 101.
Exactly. Buy low.
Buy low.
Buy low, baby.
I always see like on the Reddit stock threads, there are like a few users who are like, they're like actual stockbrokers. Like, you know, they like really know their shit. And every once in a while, like a newbie will come on and be like, why don't we just wait until things drop? And they're like, whoa, dude. Where'd you get that idea? Holy shit. Yeah. And they just like clown on them. It's so fucking funny.
Got a regular J. Paul Getty over here. So Sarah was like, okay, you can take over the company on the condition that we establish a family trust fund.
Ooh, smart.
You'll control it, but the only time you personally can draw from it is to make these moves to expand our oil interests. Plus, by putting all of our profits in trust, it protects them from taxation, and all the beneficiaries could at least count on decent, untaxed annual incomes from the interest, because capitalism, am I right?
Yep.
Anyway, but the trust is going to be for your kids and their kids, because Sarah knew that J. Paul was a piece of shit when it came to his kids, so she didn't trust him to take care of them.
Good.
Anyway, so J. Paul agreed, and the Sarah C. Getty Trust was established with a $3.3 million initial investment from Sarah.
That's crazy.
With the principal beneficiaries being J. Paul's sons, George, John Paul Jr., and Gordon. Because J. Paul, still holding a grudge against Adolf Bean, specifically agreed on the condition that Ronald be excluded.
Oh my God. That's fucked up.
He's a baby.
Like, he has he doesn't have anything to do with. And that's your child. Like,
yeah.
You know, whatever happened between you and his mom, like, the baby has no fault in that.
But he doesn't care about his children. He's like,
I know.
Yeah. So, and you would think, like, Sarah's a good person. Why does she agree to this? Two things. So, one, the investment was only $3.3 million.
Mm-hmm.
And she planned to leave all her grandkids some money from her personal fortune anyway.
Right.
So she was like, okay, I'm going to take care of Ronald.
Yeah.
And two, Adolphine's dad was super wealthy. So she figured, like, Ronald he's going to be fine. Little did anyone know that the trust would grow to be worth billions, and also that Ronald's grandpa would lose his fortune in the coming years because he didn't fuck with the Nazis. So they threw his ass in jail and, like, took everything he had.
Oh, no.
Yeah, so... And even though Ronald was disinherited over this petty shit, his future children wouldn't be, because the trust set up for that generation of Gettys to be, like, the secondary beneficiaries. Wow. Which somehow makes this an even more bitter pill to swallow for Ronald. Yeah. Anyway, so guess what? In business, J. Paul's luck never ran out. He executed his plan to acquire other oil companies and eventually turned Getty Oil into one of the largest corporations in the world. And he personally became the wealthiest American and one of the richest individuals who ever lived. Let's not even talk about what happened after he started getting oil in the Middle East. He kind of hit the jackpot there because he spoke Arabic, so he was making deals that other oil tycoons were just unable to make. Meanwhile, he continued to be a deadbeat dad. And since he moved full-time to Europe and refused to fly, it was that much easier to stay away. Sometimes the only contact he'd have with his boys for long stretches of time were cards he'd send for their birthdays. Or on occasion, he'd show up and take them to the toy store. Or not, he wouldn't show up, but, like, the kids would be in Europe, and then he'd be like, let's go to the toy store. But the weird thing is that he'd write in his diary that he loved them. But, like, even then, it would be something like, my sons, all of them are great rewards. Or, like, saw my beloved sons, Paul Jr. and Gordon. Paul is 50 inches tall. Gordon is 48 inches tall. They are lovely. And, like, that was it.
Okay.
That was, like, the extent of what he thought about his kids. Paul Jr. says that one time he sent his dad a letter when he was, like, 8 years old to tell him that he loved and missed him and wanted to see him, but J. Paul only sent back the letter with no response, but with Jr. spelling errors corrected.
Oh, fuck.
Other times, J. Paul would go years at a time with no contact at all with his kids, not even a letter. Jr. and Gordon didn't hear from him for 12 years. And he paid the absolute bare minimum in child support, just some real weirdo shit. Then J. Paul got married again to an opera singer named Teddy Lynch in 1939, despite having a live-in long-term friend/lover named Penelope Kitson. Penelope seems really cool because she was, like, this crazy successful interior designer on her own. And so she didn't want his money or, like, care about his money. So she kept him at a distance. Like, he was begging to marry her for years and decades. And yeah. She was like, no, nah, I'm good. Like, so
good for her.
Yeah. So she's pretty smart. And she became, like, the most constant presence in his life. Like, more than his kids, obviously, because he doesn't fucking know his kids, more than any of his wives. She lived on, like, a little cottage on his property, and she became, like, if his kids ever needed to contact him and he was ignoring them, like, they would call Penelope. So anyway, his wife, Teddy, they had a son named Timmy in 1946 that he was mildly more involved with, but just by J. Paul's standards, meaning that he didn't try to pretend that he didn't exist.
Okay.
He actually couldn't, because Timmy was a sickly child, and more on Timmy in a minute. So now George came of age, and J. Paul, actually reached out to him. He told him that as he was his heir, it was time that he took his place within the company and learned the business. And surprisingly, he did the same when Ronald came of age. It's like he didn't care about his kids at all until he figured he could use them somehow.
Okay.
But because he did care about dynasties, like he cared about
his name
because of like the royalty chip on his shoulder. And I think it was, I can't remember which one it was. Like, I want to say it was either Hearst or Rockefeller or something told him, like, you got to have sons. Like, you got to, like, you got to have this dynasty. And he was like, I got sons.
He wants to be old money. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that's, like, their whole thing.
Yeah, exactly. Anyway, so now the two boys, George and Ronald, are working in the company. But then J. Paul started to play this sick game where he would pit them all against each other.
Ooh, okay, fun.
Because they don't know each other. You know, they're brothers, but like, yeah.
Barely.
Yeah. So as George, who was doing pretty well in the company, actually rose in the ranks, J. Paul would make him criticize Ronald, who was rising through the ranks in a different department. And then he'd make Ronald do the same thing to George. It was a shit show. Meanwhile, throughout this time in the 50s, sickly little Timmy was getting worse. It turns out he has cancer. And according to Teddy, J. Paul spent years scolding her for how much she was spending on Timmy's treatment.
What?
Until he finally died at age 12 in 1958. And Teddy divorced him that same year. Yeah.
Wow, that's awful.
She wrote her autobiography, and I think she, like, J. Paul was just like, he's gonna die. Like, why are you spending all that money on him?
Okay.
Mm-hmm. But Timmy's death kind of shook J. Paul to some extent, whatever that means to a man like him. He did feel grief, not that he went to the funeral or anything, but he was overcome with sadness and love for his son after his death.
Okay.
Like in his diaries, he was like, my sweet, beautiful Timmy.
Who I didn't want to help keep alive.
Yeah, exactly. Anyway, it did sort of spur him to stop ignoring his two surviving youngest sons.
Well, okay.
So by now, all the boys are married with kids except for the youngest, Gordon. And Junior had been trying to get his dad's attention for a couple of years because he married young to this great girl named Gail. And he just had a baby boy named John Paul Getty III. So he had this young family and was eager to join his brothers in the business. Since his dad had been ignoring him, he reached out to his brother George, who, of course, he barely knew. And George was basically like, go pump gas at one of our gas stations.
Oh, my God.
So that's what he was doing when he finally got the call from Daddy to come out to Italy to discuss his future. And Junior takes along his wife, Gail, and young Paul. Gail is super smart and charismatic, and she hits it off right away with J. Paul. Also, J. Paul has, like, a weakness for women. So, like, you got, like, this, like, charismatic, beautiful young woman. And he's,
he was going to marry her.
Probably would have if she wasn't married to his son.
Yeah.
Anyway, and also, J. Paul is weirdly enamored by both her and young Paul, who's just a toddler. Like, he loved young Paul.
Hmm.
And as luck would have it, at the hotel in Italy where they met to have lunch that day, a small, semi-violent protest popped off just outside. And J. Paul, Gail, and young Paul, and Junior, had to sort of flee the hotel in a hurry to one of the family's other properties in Italy, where they were holed up for a while until things calmed down with the protests.
Oh, wow.
And during that time, they bonded a lot. Like, they were like a real family.
That's crazy.
Yeah. And J. Paul got super attached to the three of them, and they ended up spending the summer together traveling through the Italian countryside.
Wow.
So, because of that, he installed Junior as the head of Getty Italia in Rome, and he became something of the golden child. He also sent Gordon out to the Mideast since he didn't have a family yet, and that post was, like, in the middle of the desert somewhere, so it was going to be, like, tough for, you know, someone who had, like, a family to be out there. But Gordon fucked up almost immediately because one of his woman employees was caught having an affair with one of the Saudis, and they were going to stone her.
Oh, fuck.
So Gordon smuggled her out of the country, and then he had to flee because he assisted in her escape, so they were going to throw him in jail. J. Paul, instead of standing by Gordon, was pissed because now they were like kind of on bad terms with the Saudis, And in his mind, that woman knew what the laws were, and if those were the consequences for breaking the law, so be it.
Ouch.
So Gordon got banished to Oklahoma, where he was largely ignored again, until Gordon married this woman named Anne, and they started their family and were sort of short on money. But why should the son of the wealthiest man in the U.S. be short on money? Especially when Gordon himself was worth millions and millions on paper from what was coming to him from his share of the trust. So he sued his dad to get some sort of access to the trust, and this lawsuit tore the family apart. All the brothers started fighting with each other because if Gordon won and they dissolved the trust, it would no longer be untaxable and they would lose a shit ton of money. It was a mess. And it went on for years and years. It went to the California Supreme Court. Gordon ultimately lost, but ironically, the fight he put up made his dad respect him, and now he was the favorite.
Oh my God.
And ultimately...
Oh, I want to watch Succession.
Yeah, this is some Succession shit.
Yeah, because like at the season finale last season, you could tell he respected his son for outing him when he did.
For sure.
Like, he loves that. Yeah.
I don't know. We'll see. Because he's vindictive, that motherfucker. We'll see what happens. He'll put him through the ringer for something.
And that poor boy is just like, he's all kinds of fucked up.
He reminds me of Junior. Well, okay. It's coming up.
Okay.
All right. So anyway, years and years later, J. Paul put Gordon in charge of the trust.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Which makes later it will make him the richest because you get a salary for doing that. So yeah. Anyway, and he's the favorite, especially because of what happened with Junior. So let's get back to Junior. So Junior and his wife Gail broke up. It was a mutual breakup. They had four kids together and remained friends, not just because of the kids, but genuinely friends. Gail got a new man and Junior married a woman named Talita Pohl, who was introduced to him by Klaus von Bülow. Anyway, Junior was eager to enjoy his hot new wife and was altogether sick of being an oil executive and wanted to be a hippie. So he quit and he and Talita moved to Morocco to kick it with the Rolling Stones and Timothy Leary and to do heroin and shit.
Ooh.
Word got back to J. Paul that Junior was a heroin addict, and for all intents and purposes, he disowned him and struck him from his will, leaving him only $500.
Yo! But yesterday I spent $500 and I didn't even realize
what,
it,
at
man.
Target?
I was just like, wait a minute. When I looked at my bank account, I was like, what?
You ever spend hella money at the grocery store and you're like, oh my God.
I spent $200 at Sprouts last week.
Yeah.
But in my defense, I hadn't been to the grocery store in a long time.
Oh, so you stocked up.
Because I've been doing just Instacart and stuff. Mm-hmm. But I like it's different when you're there. You need to see shit. Like,
Right.
So I was like, I got to just go. I went like during an off hour. Oh, yeah. I spent $200. I'm a family of two. Okay. So that shit don't make sense.
And Bruno.
Yeah. But Bruno's food costs like nothing.
Bruno don't shop at Sprouts.
No.
So anyway. But also, he still has his money from the trust. You can't, like, take him out of the trust, but, like...
Yeah, but it's a slap in the face. It's
right,
just, like...
exactly.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, anyway, Junior and Talita bounced around the world being junkies. But then, Talita wanted to get clean because they had a son.
Okay.
A son they named... Look, he's not super important. I just wanted to tell you his name because it's ridiculous. Tara Gabriel Gramophone Galaxy Getty.
No.
That's how fucked up on drugs they were.
Did you see, speaking of ridiculous names, did you see stupid ass Elon Musk talk shit about pronouns this week, and then everybody was dragging him for his kid's name?
Yeah
Like, shut the fuck up. What is it with these men that they're like, they can only externally think, like there's no internal thinking on their part, right? They only like project,
right?
Because I fucking hate that.
Because they stop needing to do that once they get super rich.
No, I mean, you still need to do it, but they just don't.
They don't, exactly. Yeah.
They surround themselves with people that allow them to fucking act like that. That's why Kanye makes those stupid ass fucking Moonrock shoes.
Ugh, the most recent one I saw, I was like, how is that happening? Like,
did you see everybody? Okay? And that was like the meme going viral. That was like, man, rich people don't have real friends.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah. Do you follow that Instagram account, Do moi?
No.
It's like a blind item thing.
I found it.
D-E-U-X-M-O-I.
Statements made on this account have not been independently confirmed. What is it?
It's like a blind item thing.
Okay. It's private. I have to request it.
Yeah. But I think I follow it on Drama Club, so you can look right away.
Oh, okay.
Anyway, it seems like she's in talks with like a couple people that are embedded in the West Kardashian family. Uh-huh. And it's what you said, like, they're not together. Kim and Kanye are not together. He lives in Wyoming. She lives in Los Angeles. And yeah, that's it.
It's just like,
yeah,
whatever, for whatever show purposes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Where was I? Okay, so gramophone. Gabriel, gramophone, Galaxy, Getty. Anyway, so Talita actually did get clean, but Junior had no interest in getting clean, so they broke up and he abandoned her and Tara. Not that he had contact with his kids with Gail at that point anyway.
I was going to say, he has four other kids, right?
Yeah, uh-huh. So he was basically doing what his dad did to him, but he stepped up his game because he was also a heroin addict.
That's what's up.
So just like the worst. Anyway, eventually Talita wanted to make it official and asked for a divorce in 1971. And that's when Junior figured he'd try to win her back. So he was like, I'll get clean. Like, come meet me in our house in Italy. Like, let's talk things over. And Talita was like, okay, sure. Not because she wanted to get back with him, but because her lawyers were like, you want to make it look like you made an effort. Like, go meet him and talk about whatever like he wants to talk about.
Right.
So she goes to meet him at their house in Italy. One thing led to another. We're not sure what exactly, but Talita died of a drug and alcohol overdose that night.
Oh, my God.
Very suspicious shit because she'd been clean. And she was there to begin divorce discussions with him because he wasn't clean. So anyway, Junior had to get the fuck out of Italy and literally could never go back in case someone decided to arrest him.
Right. I think that does happen, though, right? Like, people who have been clean for a long time, when they use again, a lot of the time they have an overdose because
right,
they try tolerant. To use the same amount that they were using, and yeah, they can't.
Right. But it just seems strange because, I mean, then she wouldn't have broken up with him, you know?
I guess. I don't know, dude. I mean, you're an addict. You're always an addict, even if right. you're sober.
Yeah, it's true. Anyway, the death of Talita broke Junior, and he spiraled even deeper into drug and alcohol abuse. He was just like feeling really guilty. He felt like he was haunted by Talita. He loved her, and yeah, it was just bad for him. And he was a fucking mess. He became a recluse with a death wish.
Oh, fuck.
Gail actually took his and Talita's son, Galaxy Gramophone. Yeah.
Wow.
I think he was like great. He was like 2 years old. He was a baby when his mom died. And, you know, Gail is a fucking boss.
Yeah, that's wonderful.
She was like, he belongs with his family. So yeah. She just, like, took him.
What an angel.
Yeah. Meanwhile, Jay Paul's firstborn, George, is running the California side of the business. And Jay Paul is back to being an asshole. As George described it, quote, the Getty successes were my dad's and the failures were mine.
Mm.
As, like, you can imagine. Mm-hmm. And Jay Paul was becoming increasingly hostile towards his son, not bothering to hide his contempt or even his hate. As a result, George started spiraling with drugs and alcohol too.
Oh.
And in 1973, in his Bel Air home, he took a bottle of sedatives, washed them down with alcohol, and stabbed himself with a barbecue fork. By the time his friends broke down the door, he was in bad shape. But because he was the son of the richest man in the United States, they didn't take him to the nearest hospital, UCLA, because they figured it was too high profile, and instead took him to what they figured was a more discreet hospital farther away, but it took too long to get there, and he didn't make it.
Oh, my God.
He died at age 49.
May!
Yeah. Mm. Once again, Jay Paul was overcome with grief for a dead son that he didn't care about while he was alive.
Whose mounting pressure probably had some or most to do with
most to do with it, probably.
Yeah.
And just a few months later, Jay Paul's humanity would be tested again, this time by his one-time favorite grandson, John Paul Getty III, young Paul.
this is so weird that he's this monster of a dad because his parents like loved him so much.
Yeah.
Like usually when you see somebody who's a monster parent, they had a really fucked up childhood. Like their parents were also monsters.
Right. Exactly. It's strange. I think it's because he thought that being a good father and being a good husband would get in the way of making money. And that's all he cared about. And get in the way of, like, fucking bitches. And yeah. Those are the only two things that he cared about.
So everything else is just...
He did have this quote when he was older. He was like, I don't think you could be a good businessman and a family man. And he was like, if I could trade, like, all my success in business for a family, I would do that. But, like, are you fucking serious?
No, you could have.
Yeah, you could have.
Nothing stopped you from that.
Because, like, some sort of miracle, you picked all these wonderful women.
Yeah, like, what are you talking about?
Okay, so young Paul. Young Paul took his parents' breakup hard. For one, he worshipped his dad. And basically from one day to the next, his dad was gone. Not just gone, but like with a new family. And it was like basically a whole new person, a hippie. Also, he didn't like Gail's new man, which I guess is to be expected if like you worship your dad, you know?
Right.
Then he took it really hard when Talita died because he really liked her. She seemed like a cool chick too. So he started rebelling as a young teen and actually left school and moved out to his own flat in Rome at like 15 or 16 to be a hippie too. Gail figured he kind of needed his space and she didn't think too much of it. And they were pretty close. Either he'd come home for lunch most days or she'd go drop off food for him and his little girlfriend. So, like, sure, maybe it was out of the ordinary, but things could be much, much worse.
Right.
Anyway, she kind of had a boys will be boys attitude about it. Like, maybe he's just going through a phase. He needs to, like, let off some steam. Then he'll come back home. She said that. Like, this is some rich boy in Paris shit, and in France, no one would have batted an eye, but in Rome, at the time, this was, like, kind of weird, and young Paul kind of stood out for his lifestyle. And as a result, he became a very minor celebrity. The press called him the golden hippie, and he even parlayed his notoriety into posing nude for Play Men magazine for extra cash. So here's a 16-year-old boy who thinks he's an adult.
Mm-hmm. has adult money.
Not really, okay. Because he's underage, so he's not making money from his trust yet. Yeah. So he's got, like, whatever money Gail gives him, which is nothing because she, like, walked away from her marriage. Because they were friends, so she was like, all right, like, whatever. She didn't ask for anything. So anyway, he thinks he's an adult. He thinks he's invincible and is on top of the world, partying in the streets of Rome, not realizing that he has a big-ass target on his back. And whoops, he's kidnapped by the mafia on July 10th, 1973. What's poppin'? We in Roma drinking sparkling water, kidnapping Gettys. So Gail goes a couple days without hearing from young Paul. And that's really weird because, like I said, they were close. And that night she got a call from someone who was like, we have your son. And we're going to need a lot of money to give him back. Don't call the cops and we'll call you back with instructions. So Gail, of course, freaks the fuck out. Yeah. She calls Junior to tell him what's up. But of course, he's fucking useless. He's a junkie. And he can't offer her any support. So she calls the cops and they interrogate her for 5 hours and come to the conclusion that it's a hoax. And young Paul is doing this for money and or attention. Because like I said, he didn't have money. So he was a painter. So he would paint. He would exchange at the local restaurants his paintings for food and stuff. So they were like, oh, he just needs some money to fucking party, you know?
Right.
Essentially, the cops don't do shit. Not only that, but they leaked to the press their doubts about the case. And now the headlines in Italy and around the world are, quote, kidnapping or joke? ? It's a shit show. So now the mafia gets fucking pissed because they think the Gettys are using their influence to manipulate the media and turn this into a joke. Meanwhile, Gail can't even get into contact with any of the Gettys. They're not taking any of her calls.
Wow.
She's literally on her own. The mafia send word to the Italian press that they're asking $17 million for young Paul. Chump change for J. Paul Getty, who was estimated at the time to have a personal fortune of over $1 billion. But J. Paul speaks to the press and makes it clear that he won't pay a penny for any ransom, ostensibly because paying a ransom would put the rest of his children and grandchildren at risk for kidnap. I mean, I hear you.
Yeah, but still, what are you going to do?
Yeah.
Like, they're already at risk, honestly.
Yeah, like, right. It's like, I'm surprised this didn't happen before.
Yeah.
And J. Paul himself had been very, like, he, at this point, is somewhat of a recluse, like, because he'd been scared of kidnapping.
Yeah.
So he should know. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but he doesn't care. Also, J. Paul was notoriously cheap. Like, people around the world already knew that he had a payphone in his house, so the guests had to pay for their own calls. And he would respond to letters on the backs and in the margins of the letters that were sent to him so as not to spend on paper.
Dude, there's always, like, I always hear that, like, rich people are cheap and that's how they stay rich.
That's not true.
Why?
That's not how they stay rich. No, that's, like, it's like mental illness.
Yeah. Being cheap is a mental illness. By May
2020.
I won't say her last name. That is a statement. I'm putting that shit on your grave.
Being cheap to this extent, you know?
Oh, yeah. Have you ever seen that show? I've never seen it, actually, but it's on TLC. It's called, like, Extreme Cheapskates.
Yes, yes, exactly.
Like, I remember seeing a clip of a woman who peeled all her fruit at the grocery store because you pay by the pound.
The weight, exactly.
And I was like, bitch, no.
That's exactly what I'm talking about. You know what I do at the grocery store when you pay by the pound, though? Like, the broccoli, I break off the ends. That shit is heavy.
Bitch, you're cheap. I never paid off. I've never done that.
Life pro tip right there. Never spend $200 at Sprouts again. Spend $1.98.
Saving 50 cents. Tearing off this broccoli stob.
So anyway, he would, like, wash his own socks and his chonies because he knew the exact amount of, like, soap that he wanted to use.
Okay, yeah, this, like, is fucking crazy.
Yeah, it's bad. So it was a problem. And everybody knew that about him. So they're like, you know. So
he ain't paying $17 million.
Exactly.
Yeah.
On July 30th, the mafia called Gail again, and this guy who identifies himself by the codename 50 or 50 is like, all right, Gail, where's our money? And she tries to explain that she's alone in this, that the Gettys are freezing her out and she doesn't have any money. She wasn't getting alimony because, like I said, when she broke up with Junior, they were friends. So it was just like, okay, pay me the child support, you know, whatever. And also, he wasn't really paying his child support because he was a junkie.
Yeah. This is like when they kidnap Patty Hearst, and the dad is like, I don't know, like, we don't keep this money fluid. Like, what do you guys think? Like,
yeah, exactly. So anyway, so they're like, ask his dad. And she was like, his dad is out of his mind on drugs. Like,
yeah.
So they think that, like, the 50 doesn't believe her. And he's like the spokesperson for the mafia. And they're like, you're playing with us. Like, there's no way. This is not true. How could this be true? Were the Gettys really willing to let one of their own die over a measly $17 million?
Oh, Jesus.
And at this point, it became in the police's best interest to treat this like a hoax because they'd spent like a month half-heartedly investigating this. So obviously they got nowhere. And the only way for them to save face is to call it a hoax. Also, apparently Romans love rumors, like I love scammers, and the Roman public was, like, loving this story that this could be an elaborate hoax. And Junior started to believe it, too, because then it took him off the hook and allowed him to go back to doing his drugs and just waiting for young Paul to show up safe and sound sooner or later. And then the media started judging Gail for not showing enough emotion on TV and stuff. Because I guess, culturally in Italy, like, when bad things happen, like, if something happened to your son or something, the mom would get on TV and, like, start crying and like
fall
fainting
to the ground.
Yeah, exactly. So she wasn't doing that. She was, like, being stoic, and they started to categorize her as either being complicit in this hoax or just, like, a rich mom that didn't care about the well-being of her son.
How stupid.
She's not even rich. She's, like, literally living in, like, a 3-bedroom house with her 4 kids and her new, like, it's, yeah. Anyway, so that narrative bled out from Italy to the rest of the world's media. So she's finally sat for an interview, and she was like, I need to put myself out there because people aren't believing me. And the interviewer asked her, like, Mrs. Getty, like, do you think that your son is still alive? And, like, that was it. Like, that was, like, the first time she realized, oh, shit, I don't know if he's still alive. Like, he could be dead. Ugh. It's, I can't imagine what it was like to be her right now. Because she's alone, you know?
Yeah.
So she got her dad, who was a prominent judge in San Francisco, and who J. Paul actually respected, to put in a word to J. Paul on her behalf. And finally, J. Paul agreed to send one of his employees to Italy to help Gail. This dude was an ex-CIA, and his name was Fletcher Chase. This is Mark Wahlberg in the movie and Brendan Fraser in the series. Chase becomes the intermediary between the mafia and Gail, and also between the police. But this just makes the mafia mad, and they get frustrated that they seem to be getting nowhere. So they start to treat young Paul very badly. Like, up until then, he had a radio. He was just, like, in a room by himself somewhere. But they took his radio away. They sold him to a different mafia family because, like, they're like, this is going on for a long time. Like, this is getting riskier and riskier. So they sold him to a different family because they were just, like, over it and the risk was getting too high. I think they were pushing 2 months at that point with him. And his new captors kept him in chains, gagged him, would force him to play Russian roulette. Like, it's just getting physically and psychologically very bad for young Paul.
Right.
The negotiations continue into October, so we're like 4 months in. And that's when they tell Gail that they've cut young Paul's ear off. And if they don't get their money soon, they're going to start sending him back to her in pieces. They send the ear to one of the newspapers, and when police show it to Gail, she can confirm that it's young Paul's because of the freckles. Like, young Paul is a redhead, so they sent her the lock of hair and some, and the ear, and she's like, oh my god.
Fuck.
So Gail realizes, like, it's up to her. No one is going to help her. So she sends a personal letter to President Nixon begging for help, and Nixon sends an FBI lawyer who had familial ties to the region to try to negotiate. And like within 5 minutes of landing in Italy, that dude got the ransom lowered to $3.2 million. Like, you just needed somebody to like come and do something, you know?
Right. Yeah.
Meanwhile, things are really, really bad with young Paul. His wound got infected. He got pneumonia.
Oh no.
They pumped him full of penicillin to try to treat the infection, but he was allergic to penicillin. So he was about to go into anaphylactic shock. He's definitely not going to make it much longer. That's when Cinquenta called Gail to tell her what was up with him, genuinely sounding worried that the deal wouldn't happen in time. Because then it's like,
yeah, I mean, yeah, know, it's over.
It's over. So anyway, so then Gail calls her dad to like call J. Paul, and J. Paul finally like takes the call, and he agrees to pay $2.2 million, which was the maximum that was tax deductible.
Oh my God.
And lend Junior the rest, the other million, at 4% interest, lend him at 4% interest. And then his liaison, Chase, would make the drop. And finally, on December 15th, J. Paul Getty's birthday, after 5 months, young Paul was released. And he was traumatized, to say the least. And after all that, later that day, when he called to thank his grandfather, J. Paul wouldn't take the call. Like, one of the great scumbags of the world, I think.
God damn.
Both Gail and young Paul had major PTSD. Young Paul would have to take hella drugs to be able to sleep, even for just like a few hours a night. They both had nightmares. Young Paul would wake up screaming on the rare occasions he could sleep.
Oh no.
He ended up marrying like the girlfriend that he was sort of living with like, when he got kidnapped.
Okay.
Her name was Martine. So he married her very quickly after he was released. But there was a clause in his trust that if he got married before a certain age, I think like 25, he wouldn't get any of his annual income from the trust.
Oh, fuck.
And Martine had just had their baby, a boy named Balthazar, who famously had a big, messy affair with Sienna Miller. But anyway.
Oh, yeah.
Balthazar Getty, yeah. But anyway, young Paul was broke, depressed, traumatized. Also, he became an addict during the kidnapping because they were plying him with brandy every day just to try to keep him warm.
Yeah.
Because he was, like, outside in chains for months. And, like, yeah, so he became, like, an alcoholic. And then, like, when he got out, he couldn't sleep. So, like, now he's, like, a drug addict and an alcoholic. I feel so bad for him. It went really bad for him.
That's fucked up.
So he has all this shit working against him, and he's still super young. Meanwhile, people seem done with J. Paul at that point.
good.
Just like the bad press, like the world just wasn't having it with him. His longtime lover Penelope left him. He opened the Getty Villa as a museum in Malibu to display some of the art that he spent a lifetime collecting, and the museum got trashed in virtually every important media publication. This is the old Getty Museum, by the way, not the new one. He'd just gotten his third facelift in 25 years at age 83, and it somehow made him look even older.
Oh, no.
Finally, it seemed like his good luck streak was ending. He tried in his last years to reach out to his family members, and he was more successful with some than with others. But he died in 1976, shortly after that last facelift, essentially alone. Sure, there was hella money in the trust, so I guess he was successful in that it was the only thing that he cared about.
Yeah.
He left most of his personal $1 billion fortune to his museum, and the trust itself had over $2 billion in it at that time. By the 80s, Junior and Gordon were making $28 million a year off the interest alone, each.
Wow.
And since their brother George was dead, George's equal part was being split by his three daughters. The Georgettes is what the family called them.
How cute.
And of course, Ronald made nothing from it, despite his dad promising him for decades that he'd make it right and make sure that he was taken care of.
Wow.
But his dad did leave him $320,000. And named him the executor of his will, which paid a fee of $4 million. He ultimately sued the museum and the trust to try to get his part, but that case was settled for just $10 million.
Junior, I was going to say, it sounds pretty, like, airtight. Like,
yeah, exactly. Yeah. It is airtight.
It was, like, it was set in stone back when you were a baby that you were going to get shit. How are you going to try to? Yeah.
Yeah. I feel bad for him.
Me too. That's fucked up.
Junior, meanwhile, was still a big-time drug addict and was in and out of rehab. His daughter with Gail, Eileen, married Elizabeth Taylor's son, Christopher Wilding.
Oh, damn.
Young Paul tried his hand at acting to try to make ends meet, but realized that he had to quit drinking to do it well. So his doctors put him on drugs to be able to function.
I'm sorry. Hollywood!
Welcome to Tarzana, baby. That's where Balthazar was born.
Yeah.
So he accidentally overdosed in 1981.
Oh, fuck.
He survived, but he had a stroke and fell into a coma.
Oh, no.
Klaus von Bülow in the comas, dude. After a few weeks, they told Gail that there was no hope, but she, like, Gail is an amazing woman. Like, she just, like, refused to give up on him. Mm-hmm. And after, like, 2 months, he actually woke up. And awesome. But he was blind and paralyzed.
Oh, fuck.
The whole time he was in the hospital, she tried to get in contact with Junior, and he wouldn't come see him or even help to pay the hospital bills.
That guy really went off, like.
Yeah, yeah.
That's crazy. Mm-hmm.
Gail had to sue his ass to help with the $25,000 a month that it was costing to keep young Paul alive. And the judge destroyed Junior from the bench in his decision, forcing him to pay.
Good.
He said that Junior should be, quote, ashamed of himself for spending far more money on court obligations than living up to his moral duties.
Good.
Bill Newsom, a judge and close friend of Junior's and also father to our current governor, Gavin Newsom, said that he was dumbfounded by Junior's behavior because he personally knew that Junior owned single books in his personal library that cost more than it would have taken to take care of his son for years.
Fucking asshole.
But it seemed like Junior was repeating the pattern of behavior that he did when young Paul was kidnapped. Like, if he pretended that it was fake and that Gail was trying to scam him out of $25,000 a month, then maybe young Paul really wasn't as sick as they were telling him. He's just trying to, like, justify doing nothing to himself. Yeah. But the damage was done and the whole family turned away from Junior after that. It was just, that was, like, the straw that broke the camel's back. And that sent him into a deeper depression. Meanwhile, Gordon, who was in charge of the trust and therefore was the controlling shareholder of Getty Oil, decided to sell the company to Texaco. That sale, the largest corporate acquisition in American history at that time, $10 billion, immediately increased the value of the trust to over $4 billion.
Wow.
What's crazy to me is, like, this is, like, the most, at that time, like, the richest family in America at $4 billion. And, like, now, like.
Yeah. Jeff Bezos.
Yeah. Jeff Bezos. Basically a trillionaire.
Yeah, it's fucking insane.
This, it's, It doesn't need to be
this
wrong.
Way, guys. Yeah, it's very wrong.
And it wasn't that long ago. This was in the 70s.
Yeah.
In the 80s, actually, you know?
Yeah. Fucking Reagan.
Yeah, exactly.
Sorry.
There's an amazing documentary on Showtime right now about Reagan. You should watch it. It like, yeah, it's so fucking good. It infuriated me. Okay. Anyway. So then the trust is now worth over $4 billion. And soon after that, Gordon made the decision to cash everyone out and dissolve the trust. Because, like, there's, because of this trust, like, there's all this problem. And he's just like, you know what?
Let's have enough money.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So after paying almost $1 billion in taxes.
Good.
Good, right? Gordon Jr. and the Georgettes all got almost $1 billion each. And the leftover couple hundred million was divided among the rest of J. Paul's, I think, like, 14 grandkids. My boy Ronald again got nothing.
Oh, no.
He tried to get even with his dad to make his own fortune like he had done, you know, but he lost all that measly $14 million that he had. Meanwhile, Junior is now making $1 million a week in interest alone because of his cash out and overnight became the sixth richest man in the UK where he lived. He really wanted to overcome his addiction finally, though, and he was basically living full-time in a hospital. So he straight up started giving away his money to arts and addiction programs in the UK. Good. At one point, he made a lump £50 million donation to fund the arts and was knighted by the Queen.
And heroin addict.
I know. Isn't that crazy?
Yes.
Margaret Thatcher would come visit him in rehab and like check on him. Like, she was like, are you okay? Like, why are you still here? Like, maybe it's time for you to get out. And he was like panicking. He was like, no, I'm not okay yet. When I read that in the book, I was imagining Gillian Anderson going.
Yeah.
Did you know that she was with the guy from The Crown, the creator of The Crown, Peter Morgan?
No,
that's her man.
They just break up.
They just broke up.
Okay,
yeah.
I saw that she broke up with her longtime man, and I didn't know who it was.
I didn't know that was him.
Hmm.
She could do. I don't care who it is. She could do better.
She's a badass bitch.
Yeah, she is. Anyway, Junior also paid $1 million for Klaus von Bülow's legal fees.
Okay,
and as we know, that went straight in Alan Dershowitz's pockets. In 1985, Eileen had given birth. This is Junior and Gail's daughter. Eileen had given birth and was suffering from severe postpartum depression to the point where she was sleeping in Liz Taylor's bed with her every night because it was the only thing that comforted her. And this was during the peak of Liz's AIDS advocacy. So then Eileen came right out with it and told Liz that she suspected that she was HIV positive.
Oh, wow.
And Liz, being the president of AMFAR, the American Foundation for AIDS Research, sprang into action. The more I learn about Liz Taylor, like, the more I love that bitch. She's amazing.
Yeah, she's wonderful.
I bought my mom, there's like this candy shop on Rodeo, not on Rodeo, but like on the street over, that has really fancy chocolate covered marshmallows, which is like my mom's favorite. So I went a couple days ago to go pick them up for her. And while I was in there was like this woman who was a customer who I guess has been a customer for like 50 years there. And she was like insane, but like in the best way. And she just like started talking to me about everything. And she was like, oh, this thing right here, this is Katharine Hepburn's favorite chocolate on earth. Like, she wrote about it in her autobiography.
That and I was bitch like, was crazy, May. She was just saying that shit.
No, she wasn't. She wasn't. She wasn't, because the guy behind the counter was like, yeah, that's why it's called Catherine's Turtles. Like, and I was like, oh, get me some of those. And he was like, and then this thing over here is Liz Taylor's favorite thing in the store. And I was like, get me some of those. Like, you guys are speaking my language. Okay, anyway, so Liz Taylor's site. More of the story, Liz Taylor's site. anyway, luckily, neither Christopher nor Andrew the baby were positive. It seems like Eileen had spent much of her rebellious late teens after her brother's kidnapping, just kind of like struggling to deal. She must have been, that must have been very hard for the kids, for all of the family, you know?
Right.
So she spent all that time in the wake of her brother's kidnapping in early 20s, having unprotected sex and also dabbling with drugs. Liz took Eileen under her wing and really cared for her during that time, but Eileen's mental state continued to deteriorate and she had a full-on nervous breakdown that required electroshock therapy.
Oh, wow.
She purposely became self-destructive and started abusing drugs heavily because, in her words, she thought it would be more acceptable to die of an overdose than die of HIV/AIDS.
Oh, wow.
Unfortunately, Christopher, who seems like a good dude, ended up divorcing her, I think partly to take care of their children and, like, take them out of a bad situation. And Eileen was in and out of rehab for years. In 1988, she met a dude in rehab that she wanted to marry, and they got married near her mom Gail's house in Santa Barbara. The day after they got back from the honeymoon, Eileen overdosed. She survived, but the marriage fell apart shortly thereafter. In the 90s, she developed full-blown AIDS, but because of the Getty money, she was able to treat it very aggressively. And she's been able to survive and became an advocate.
Wow.
Junior died in 2003 at age 70. And it seemed like he had been clean since the 80s, but he'd suffered from poor health ever since. Just because, like, that was like years and years and years of abuse to his body. Young Paul died in 2011 at 54 from the long-term complications of his accident in 1981.
Wow.
We could get into more about the wild things that the Getty money has funded, but we'd be here all day.
Yeah.
From art to anthropology, music, fashion, Sienna Miller, I could go on. So let's leave the story of the Getty dynasty here for now. Is there a moral? There are a lot of morals in this story. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, it's just amazing. What a family. Like,
right, yeah.
What a legacy. Not the one that they wanted.
Exactly, yeah. Money can't buy you happiness.
Money doesn't buy you class, a name.
Yeah, like, exactly. Yeah.
I mean, it did buy them a name, actually, but...
Especially here in California, it's amazing.
At what cost?
Yeah, at what cost? Was it worth it?
Yeah.
There's a lot also about Gordon and his wife, Anne. Like, they're like... big time philanthropists. They're crazy. Like, it's not, I mean, it's interesting, but it's not scandalous.
Right.
So if you guys want to look up Gordon and Ann Getty, there's a lot there.
It's crazy. Good job, man. That shit's wild.
Yeah, crazy.
We need one of, that's like that meme of that dude from It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia,
yeah,
where he has all the strings on the wall.
Yeah, exactly. There's so many, and they're all named John Paul Getty. So
I know. I kept getting it. I was like, James, hold on. The second, the third.
Yeah.
Fucking wild. Well, guys, that was this week's episode. Hit us up on Instagram and Twitter at Drama Club Pod, and on the website, dramaclubpod.com.
On the hotline, 505-539-0556. Merry Christmas!
Hey!
Happy holidays! Happy Hanukkah! Happy Chanukah! Did you see that video?
No, that's Smokey.
Somebody asked Smokey Robinson for a cameo, and he was like, hi, it's Smokey Robinson here. This is from John Paul Getty to your friend, Gail, and it says to wish you a special Chanukah. I don't know what that means, but I'm gonna say it. Happy Chanukah for Smokey Robinson.
That's what's up.
So happy Chanukah from the Drama Club.
Hey, hit us up next week for our new episode.
Bye, guys.
Bye.
However, whatever with your helmet.